Well, it's a joy to be able to be here this evening. I wasn't sure I'd be able to do it. I've been very deep into, for a number of days now, of a healing process of a very extraordinary kind that has then, in the last 2 days, morphed into a writing process because I have a duty to sculpt a talk that I have to give soon. And it's interesting how these elements of intentionality dovetailed, as every element of reality does, into unity. But once there is unity of an absolute sort, it is so transparently clear that every being is a fractal manifestation of the one self, that in terms of teaching, there is nothing that you do not already know or could know if you wanted to. And therefore, there's really nothing to teach. One could advise, like, don't run away from your agony. Don't believe in the illusions of the ego that want you to jump out of your skin and out of your mind and out of your loneliness and out of your sense of lack and out of your sense of alienation and separation from the oneself. Don't run away, but run inward into the self from which you have excluded your attention, your awareness, and your realization. And that plunging into the infinite depths of the self and its all-encompassing, edgeless expanse filled with waves of information that become translated by the soul and then by the ego mind a second time into a distorted projection of what cannot yet be integrated without it feeling like torment or like an impossibility that cannot even be imagined. And to deal with that, one must go beyond one's own imagination, beyond the limits of one's capacity to think, and to feel, and to process that information in any way, until one reaches the source of that information. And then all of it is revealed as total simplicity and divine order, beauty, and at the feeling level, of love. Infinite, though. It's the infinite nature of the love and the beauty and the joy and the bliss and the intelligence that the ego cannot bear. Without exploding into the whole. And so the spiritual process is one of increasing the capacity to tolerate knowledge that refutes the illusion of the existence of the ego and shows it to be fictional and without basis in reality, an acquired artifact of an amalgamation of images and thought forms introjected from what had been perceived as external to itself, but ultimately was projected out and boomeranged back. And so there is a game of ping pong, hide and seek, of yo-yoing and of alternation of polarities between the ego and the infinite self. And the process creates a vibrational field because of that duality until the two polarities are able to approach the zero point and annihilate all that appeared to be either mental or physical and is transformed into light and awareness of its own self-display of infinitely simplex structure and dynamic functioning flowing toward its ultimate reconciliation and resolution in the point of origin of time. The point of origin of the soul. And once the soul consummates its union with the self, the process of evolution and devolution, entropy and negentropy, come to an end. So all of that is contained in the engram of every soul, of every consciousness or fractal of the one consciousness, if you prefer. And at a certain moment, the self activates its energy. Its energy is specifically of love and truth in that double form of equivalence and explodes all boundaries. It is this for which the yogi gets ready for that moment of grace that is not under one's agency or control, but is the destiny from which the ego has been fleeing. So that's all I really had to communicate to you this evening. And the real reason I came was I wanted to wish farewell to our visitors who are leaving tomorrow, I believe, and to ask them if they have any last questions to be clarified or to be resolved, if there's any conflicts or any internal disturbance that I might offer some clue to settling, or whatever. I want the visitors, who by now are certainly not shy any longer, to have an opportunity to ask that. And then if any of them wish, you can come up to the front. Maybe we can put a chair up here in case anyone wants to come up and say farewell to the Sangha or offer whatever blessings before you leave. I want you to feel invited to do so. And, of course, the whole Sangha is invited to contribute and to ask questions as well. Namaste. Mm-hmm, Flo. Oh, okay. Courageous one. I like
that. Yes, I really feel in my heart, and that everybody's here as well.
Even more nervous. To say thank you to all of you who created, under this amazing leadership, this place and this world that touched me deeply. And going back, I don't know what's happening. Maybe I'm back next week or... So, yes.
You never left.
Okay, that's beautiful. Thank you. Yeah, so this, all of you just helped to make me feel like so welcome here, and that beauty in nature and the knowledge and the sharing really touched me deeply, and I want to say thank you on the center stage. And I have one question.
Please.
Okay. I want to understand the simulation. Where is it just the ego, which is the simulation, or is the real self as well? Or where is the... I can't really understand where it's all happening.
There's a principle of fractality. Mm-hmm. Okay. So there is one self... with sub-agencies, okay? In other words, certain functions of the self are delegated. And the first delegation is to cosmic mind, that in Gnosticism would be called the demiurge or demiurgos. And the projection of that mind produces the universe as its reflection. And then within the universe, you have many more beings of an individualized locus of consciousness that holographically contains all the information of the cosmic mind, right? And once it's a semi-permeable membrane that causes it to believe it's separate from the universe pops, then it dissolves into the infinite sea of consciousness and returns to its original blissful state in the mind of God. Mm-hmm. And the mind of God, in turn, is dissolved back into the self beyond the mind, beyond even the cosmic mind. That's our destination now.
Okay. Thank you. I have to digest that.
Mm-hmm. I think you all do. Flow is going to flow with us.
I'd love to say thank you. Beautiful teachings, a beautiful surrounding with beautiful nature, beautiful food, and most importantly, beautiful people. And what impresses me most is all you beautiful souls here. You are diverse in the most beautiful way and unified by Shunyamati's teachings, and believe in that, and that unification and diversity that makes this place so immensely beautiful and special. Thanks for sharing and allowing us to be part of this community for a short glimpse of time. And yeah, which leads me to that question, leaving here. If I may ask you, Shunyamati, if you could give me one tip, one glimpse, where can I make the most impact
in the heart,
in my real life?
Your real life is in the heart. Mm-hmm. You see, what you described as a group of souls mm-hmm. are actually all simply aspects of yourself that have been projected out. And when you have unified the internal world of the ego, its subconscious and its superconscious, then there will no longer appear as a real world, only the real self. And that real self, wherever it is, because there is no where, there's no space or time, there's only consciousness, will shine in that fullness of power that will dissolve all the illusion of separation in all the beings who mistakenly believe that they are separate, because the world is your dream.
Yeah. I understand that intellectually, but
yeah, well, the work
take
is
take on the challenge.
That's right. The way to go beyond it intellectually is to go beyond thought. Because thought keeps that as a representation, which is a defense against the real. Because as soon as you grok it totally, you're gone. Mm. The self is here. But no individual with an intention to do anything. Mm. Agency disappears into the will of God.
Accepted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Namaste.
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 Thank you. Well, I don't want to say too many words, so I just wrote a short poem. That's how I like to express things. If I were to look for words, I would choose to let them all go. Look you all in the eyes. We will have a mutual understanding. Love is the only thing that resides. That's all.
Is love a thing?
It's everything.
Is there an everything? Or is there only love?
That's a good question. What's your answer?
You have to find yours.
It's a feeling about eternity for myself. Becomes everything.
But is it whose feeling of eternity is it?
My oneself that's connected to everything. This.
Can you use the word my with the oneself?
The oneself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, the me and the my and the I, they dissolve in love.
Mm-hmm. This is what we're working on.
There's no one to work on it.
Thank you.
Love is the end of all work. Mm-hmm. It's all play after that.
That sounds fun.
It's a joy to encounter you here, and I wish you blessings on your journey.
Thank you very much.
Namaste, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you to everybody. It's been a wonderful experience. Everyone's been just so wonderful, friendly, welcoming, just such a gorgeous, peaceful atmosphere here. And it's been a really, really nice time being here. And we were really excited to hear we had one last saksang tonight. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. It's been a great joy to be present with you here and to see your blossoming in real time into your real true nature as soul and the shedding of so much of the ego baggage that's obsolete, and you're leaving in a state of much heightened freedom. So, blessings to you.
Thank you.
Your courage will continue to have effects on the world that appears to you and to your level of confidence and self-mastery that will reach ultimate levels soon.
Namaste.
Namaste. Anyone else can come up here. We're not... We don't have apartheid between visitors and nivasis. And you can also ask a question from wherever you wish. How many thought this evening's teaching made sense? A few? None? Well, maybe? Come on up. Yeah, come up from here, ask it.
It's about the teaching, actually. When you said the field is recognized as the last remnants of the real, that relates to what you were just explaining, but can you explain more clearly what that means?
Your knowledge of the field.
Yeah.
It's the knowledge, which is a very subtle symbolic representation, right? Of the real that is transparent to the real, right? It's that subtle that it is the awareness of light, but there's still a duality between the awareness and the light, and then they merge into one. And the not only are you and the field not no longer two because you've merged into it, but the field itself was only a field so long as there was a differential, and the field too is transcendent.
Thanks.
Oh, please, come on up, nectar drop.
Thank you. Thank you all to the community. Wonderful to be here.
You going somewhere? No.
Just thanking everybody. It's great to be here.
It's great that you're visiting. I appreciate it.
I'm staying.
You're staying?
Yes. Okay.
That's good news.
The question comes from Grace. Well, I guess it's coming from Grace and how to get in touch with the grace if it's not the ones, if it's not the ego or the one trying to get to the grace. How does the grace manifest, and what activities or what things to increase? Like, it's not my ego who's trying to get to it, but how do...
No, in fact, the ego is a defense against grace. Mm-hmm. It's the rejection of grace, because it wants to maintain its pseudo-autonomy as a separately existing being in a world. And grace dissolves all of that into the unified light. And so the ego is in a rajasic state for the most part, or a tamasic state. It's either spacing out and going into a state in which information cannot be processed, or it's going into a state where it's focusing on a very specific targeted intention and is not open to the infinite presence of its real nature. And so when the ego surrenders and actually wants grace and feels its own love as a fractal manifestation of that grace, then the resonance frequency that is set up between the two dissolve the illusion of difference, and the ego realizes it never was other than the self.
You, but how do you get to the surrendering?
No, there's no you to get to it. You see, if you recognize your true nature, it's love. It's already love. You see, the problem is it's love with an armoring around it of fear, because it was hurt in the past when it loved and it didn't receive love back. And so it adopted a stance of keeping either love at a distance or making sure it was in control of the loved object. And it's always safer to use a dog or a cat as an object, because they can't say things to you that'll hurt you, right? So they can bite you, though, you know, and scratch you, but you tend to forgive them and think they didn't mean it. You know? So... When the love has no object and is infinite, then the grace pours through.
Yes. There's just some gap that's like missing, I feel that.
Yeah, the gap is the ego itself. Mm. And that gap is the sense of lack created by imagining that there's a gap. You see, there's not really a gap. There's a belief that there's a gap. And that belief is there like a dike to keep out the water of the self from overwhelming you. Right? Because the ego's fear is of dying. It doesn't want to die. It wants to continue to exist, and it believes it's a biological entity. so it has to exist as a separate bodily being. And so it is terrified that the energy field of infinite consciousness and information will dissolve its energy signature that is incompatible with the infinite self. You see, it's slightly out of coherence, and it's the gap that creates a sense of incoherence, which produces all questions and doubts. How do I do it? What do I do? When? Will it happen? All of this. These are all productions of questions that sustain the gap, that want to keep the dike from bursting. And it bursts, and that's grace, right? So, but the ego has to want the bursting of the dike that will bring the overwhelm that will produce grace. But it delays it because its fear is that it will go crazy. It will just be either madness or some other state of dissociation that will make it unreachable by others, and will end up in some strange fantasy realm from which it can never be rescued. There are fantasies like that in the subconscious because of traumas that happened in the past that created such a sense of the imminence of death and of terror and of a hell realm. And so that that internal fantasy, which the ego is not sure will be, let's say, brought up from the subconscious if too much energy comes in, keeps it from wanting to know too much and to feel too much, right? Even though what you're preventing yourself from feeling is infinite bliss. And there is no hell realm except to the ego that believes it has a karmic past and a baggage remaining from the past, right? And that is its set of signifiers that it identifies it as having, right? And so because of that, it cannot afford to have those energies that are latent and suppressed emerge into conscious awareness, because they would produce very unbearable emotions. Right? So once one is able to contain all of that and recognize it as a dream, one can awaken from it without any fear that there will be some remainder of negative energies or information. It will all dissolve back into the perfection of the one self that was never born.
Thank you.
Someday that will help you. Namaste. Oh, please. Another resident of Swarga comes.
You just mentioned resonance frequency to Amrita, and that was one of the concepts that caught my attention during the teaching of how you explain. There's this gap. There's a in duality. There's the ego, and there's the self, and there's that frequency, that vibration that happens because they're not in sync, is what I understood. Mm-hmm. Is that what creates what we think of as matter?
Yeah, that's right. Matter is the rejected aspects of mind that then appear at one's event horizon as a cosmos, a universe, a world. and as a body, but that cannot be fully realized as mind, or it would bring to an end the whole illusion. You see, and it would bring unity with the Godhead. And but for the ego, that's just like extinction, and it's not interesting.
Is the singularity when there is no gap?
That's right.
But one can become, one is realized, or has realized that before the singularity event happens.
Not necessarily. For very few is that the case.
Okay.
For most, the power of the light will seem to come from without and to saturate one's consciousness. Come as revelation, or will come with visions. It could be Buddha or Christ or Kalki or whoever you were worshiping, if you were worshiping. Or it could come as just nothingness and a sense of infinity that is not conceptualized, but as a feeling state. So this because there is not really a difference between the external and the internal, but the illusory fractal sense of identity wants to maintain that duality. It wards it off until the intensity of the light is so great it can't defend itself, and then it breaks through, and you are dissolved in the Godhead.
So this might sound very nitpicky, but what about inanimate objects that seem to be there? Is that just part of the dream, or are they just in duality also?
Well, they are, you see, to you they are in duality. They don't actually exist. They are objects to you, not to themselves. To themselves, they are aspects of the self, of consciousness. They're, everything is alive, you know. The pantheists were right. You know, it's all God. And different objects have their own locus of an individual agency. And so they are like little gods, and they can appear and do things. Like Carl Jung wrote about, often he would visit Bollingen, and if he hadn't been there for a long time, when he came, the objects were angry at him, you know, and plates would fall and break, and things would be unable to be found, and locks wouldn't open. And he'd have to make peace with them and ask for forgiveness that he'd been away too long, and then suddenly the environment would become very peaceful and welcoming, and everything would work perfectly, you see. So we all have a relationship with what we think is inanimate, mm-hmm. but in fact is very much our own rejected consciousness that wants to be accepted and loved as well.
It's so true, because we also, all of the beings that we interact with that seem, that may not, we don't think of as inanimate objects, they also have that same... Mm-hmm. It's no different whether it's a microphone that seems to be working, and thank you, and or just someone in the community that I'm interacting with.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
They have that same,
yeah. Or the floor, yeah. Or the ceiling, or the trees and the birds, and it's all of it. Everything is an aspect of consciousness.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank myself.
Can I ask a question from here?
As long as it's not about a retreat.
No, I promise it isn't. At the end of the teaching, you mentioned about the ego fleeing. And this week has been very much about kind of going back to basics and being very adamant or one-pointed in meditation to cut the narratives. And what is left is just a sort of nameless dread or fear mm-hmm. that has no name. Mm-hmm. Can right. you speak a little more about what that is?
Well, the dread was always there in the ego, and the narratives were there to cover it up. So you weren't aware of the real nature of your emotional imbalance, which is the case with every ego, because the fear of death is embedded in it. As soon as consciousness identifies with a mortal body and with a sense of lack of capacity, which the infant has, no motor skills, can't survive on its own, you know, a fear of abandonment that will prove to be lethal, right, and a terror that ominous beasts or creatures of the night or whatever will come and devour one. The fantasies that an infant has, especially if they are not held in a secure way by the parental energy field, will produce a latent intensity of dread that can differ for every ego depending on its circumstances in childhood, but that is always a fear of death and of madness because of those fantasies and of entering into a hell realm that it can never escape from. So the ego is prefers to create an artificial hell realm with its narratives and enactments in the world and produce a compensating superiority complex to think, oh, I'm done, I understand it all, I get it, I'm beyond all this, I don't need to process anymore, I don't need to open up to the infinite self, I'll stay in my little ego bubble and imagine I'm already free and whatever, and that's why people invoke alcohol and other drugs and other things that will sustain that wall of delusion. But the ultimate energy that produces the dread will also attract what it dreads, right? That's always the case. What you fear most is most attracted into your space. And so what you will receive is the very grace that you're terrified of receiving. But only after you have recognized that your running away is futile, and there's a renunciation of the attempt to sustain the illusion of immortality in the body, right, as a physical being, and a surrender to death at the level of the body, of the ego, and even of the soul, and with that, the membrane becomes very thin and clear and transparent, and the light breaks in and dissolves the dread and turns it into bliss. Karuna.
So if I understand it correctly, one must... one must go through the dread first and the inner hell realms.
Well, if dread is there, you have to go through whatever is there. Mm. For everyone, you know, dread may be buried under a number of layers of sediment before you get to that. You know, there's a whole, geological system of strata of fantasies and of sanskaras and past life memories and et cetera, that may need to be gone through before one reaches that ultimate dread of extinction.
And so does one go through this dread in soul consciousness?
Well, usually one does it as an ego because it's the dread of not existing as an ego, right? If you were in the soul, you wouldn't have the dread. There'd be a dream of an ego in dread, but there you would be able to awaken from the dream. But for the ego, it's real. And for the ego, it feels such a lack of wholeness that it is possessed by images of figures from the past who supported it and sustained a kind of identity that was able to live so long as it was contained by that energy field, originally usually the mother, all right? And so there's an umbilical cord that never gets cut in the ego, even if what it produces is a flow of toxic self-hatred rather than love, or whatever is the memory trace from a childhood in which the love was not unconditional, was not consistent, was not without a quid pro quo, right, and demands that were hateful or that you wanted to rebel against, right? So that kind of self-rebellion and rebellion against the world and the other will find themselves acting out, and they won't be under your control, because the baby doesn't control what comes through the umbilical cord.
Thank you. I wanted to ask another question about this in terms of cutting the cord, if that's okay. Because I've been reading this book on Dzogchen by Tolku Orgyen Rinpoche. And so he speaks...
By which Rinpoche?
Tolku Orgyen Rinpoche.
Oh, yeah, I believe Orgyen Rinpoche. He's good.
Taught from him. Mm-hmm. And so he speaks of this Rigpa, where it's the awareness suffused with space. And I've been pondering a lot upon this duality of subject-object and sort of seeing... Understanding then the Rigpa being sort of unifying with the subject so that these polarities unify. But I guess my question is from the point of view of an ego bubble, can an ego bubble really be in that state? Like, can the ego really sense and feel that presence of the self?
No. Rigpa is the popping of the bubble. So you can read about Rigpa, and you can imagine what Rigpa is, and you might even have momentary glances, glimpses of it, to maybe a 10% solution or something that can get through the membrane without disturbing the stability of the ego's stance of separation, The ego is flirting with the enlightenment that will destroy it, and it's not serious about it. It wants to be able to turn it into master's discourse, not into liberation. It wants to be able to talk about Rigpa, and it wants to be able to tell other people that they should be in Rigpa, and but it doesn't want to become Rigpa. It's rigged against the Pa, the Supreme Father, and in favor of the Mother.
Mm-hmm.
So you have Rigma.
Does one increase it, though? Like, when one has that, does one increase that 10% by continuing flirting with it, or is that not?
Not by flirting with it, but by deconstructing the resistance. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Sure, take the mic. Oh, you got it. Okay.
Yeah. Is it on?
Good.
Hello?
Hi. Hello.
Namaste. Near the beginning of your teaching, you're speaking about feeling and going in rather than kind of running away. And this is a process that I've been engaging pretty deeply in. Allowing myself to feel all of the anger that I've been repressing, and kind of stemming off of Amrita's point, like when one is sitting in the anger and like feeling everything that's coming up, and I'm like completely like submerged in it, and there's a whole range of different emotions coming, and then in that moment, like the mind like shuts off and runs away, and in an instant, like I stop crying and like I'm not going through anything, and there's a part of me that witnesses like something's not allowing me to penetrate through to feel like the whole of it. So there's a few questions that I have.
Of course, because the anger is produced by an aborted acceptance of love. And if you really go to the core of it, love will well up, and that's what the ego doesn't want. Anger is great. Anger defends you. And the anger, when you're feeling it fully, it has no subject or object. It's not my anger at him or her. It's just anger. But then, what is anger? It's just energy, you see? And what is it? It's the energy of a kind of inverse of love, right? That is produced by a magnetic repulsion of an other whom one loved and needed, that is internalized as usually the maternal object. That's who you hate, right? You hate, but you're dependent on. And you can't stop hating because hate is a form of love. And all the hate really wants is to get love in return. The more you hate me, the more you want me to love you, you see? And then if the love is strong enough, it will dissolve the hate and you will forgive, and your heart will be able to open again.
What I'm thinking about is like the me that is witnessing the mind that is running away from feeling everything fully. The question is like, is that the sensor that's running away, the ego is running away, and where am I in the witness position?
It's the I thought. It's the I thought, in other words, the ego self-image. That is a self-image of an angry woman whose anger is self-righteous. You know, you have a right to be angry, right? You can give a whole list of reasons why, right? If all of that turns out to be a fiction and there is no basis for the anger, then it has to be accepted that it was simply a warding off of love. And then a justification to keep the heart closed. Because otherwise, if the heart opens too much, that ego I that wants to open it will die in the flood of bliss.
Thank you.
We have a few minutes left if anyone else wishes to say anything. Come on up.
I have a question about sat. Like, why is that the signifier that was chosen for sat yoga? And like, I find it significant that it comes at the end of our like main mantra.
Oh yeah, of course.
So if you could expand a little bit on the...
Well, the three mantras are in a way the trajectory of consciousness into the individual who worships Shiva, and then into the realization that I am Shiva, and then finally that Om Tat Sat is all of this is Shiva. Sat is Shiva, right? Sat is the original term for the real. And even before there was sat, there was sa. Years ago, I gave a whole long teaching about this. I won't go into all of it again. But you'll notice that syllable appears in many English words, like surprise and all kinds of words. I mean, we could come up with hundreds of words, and all of them ultimately refer back to the real. And so sat is the only being you cannot possess, because it is the being of every being. Right? Every being is an existent entity. Sat is not an entity. But because of sat, all of those entities can believe they exist. But they are only manifestations of sat. Is that useful?
Yeah, that's useful.
Okay, thank you.
This might be a little kindergarten, but something that's been on my mind. Actually, when Flo mentioned, I think you said, like, the difference of us being diverse but unified. And I have been thinking about the idea of diversity and in the idea of personalities. And I know we have our personality strategies teaching, but beyond that, we're so... So I see, okay, at the ego level, when we're just activating in these strategies, we're quite same. But then beyond that, there are so many diversities. So are these, I mean, we've talked about archetypes, sanskaras, like what makes us different?
Okay. First of all, you have to understand that the ego is not actually a monolithic entity. Okay. Your ego is made up of a crazy quilt of introjections and identifications. The part of your ego identifies with the mother, part with the father, part with other family members, part with your nationality and your region and your religion, and right. So the ego has all of these different aspects that are often dissociated off. They are suppressed so that different aspects of the ego can emerge, right? So, but your ego contains, as a structure, as a whole, almost an unlimited number of subfractals. And each of those fractal, mental objects within the ego have their own fractal interiors, right? So there's infinite complexity, right? And therefore, every ego will choose out of that infinite complexity a formula that makes it feel unique and special and different, right? So it's a deliberate self-design by the ego in order to feel worthy, to have something to contribute, to be so different from the others that its existence cannot be challenged as, oh, you're a copy of someone else, or you're, you know, just the mirror image of your mother, or you're this or that. So you have to have all of these aspects of self-differentiation. And this can remain at the imaginary level, or the focus of the desire of the mind to know the truth, which is there within the ego, even though it also is rejecting knowledge of the truth, if it is strong enough, will lead to a symbolic deepening of the ego's understanding of reality, so that you will see those aspects of yourself that are not dominant and activated at any time as present in others in the world. So they will not appear as different from you, but simply as different emphases of the same energy. And then beyond the symbolic, you will realize the whole, the sat, as the self that produces a universe of infinite variety, but that is all the same mind.
What I'm hearing is, or is this kind of the teaching of Indra's net? In the end, there's all these differences, but you realize that you're all of them? Is that the...
You even project the net, because there's no all, there's only one.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Courageous Gabriel.
But at least today I can sit.
The question that I am thinking about a lot is when a child in its experiences of, for example, abandonment, kind of loses a part of its innocence and of its feeling of being a soul.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And begins projecting the qualities of what the soul will be out into the world.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I can obviously relate to because I'm telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's fairly easy for me to find God, or whatever we want to call that mm-hmm. instance, out in the beauty of the world.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I can't find it in here. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know if there's an in here, because this is my body. And so, mm-hmm. you know, there was an answer to a Flo's question. It's in the heart, and I feel like the answer is in the heart. But sometimes I don't even know how to get there.
No, you don't. The I can't, because the heart is not in the ego. The ego is in the heart, but the heart's not in the ego. And what the ego can't understand is that the world in which you are projecting your goodness and your divinity outward into is only your mind. It's a dream you've created. So that you could disown that divine beauty mm-hmm. And seek it, you see. And so life becomes a quest, you see. And ultimately you reach a point on that quest where you realize that the beauty that you see is simply a reflection and your heart is a mirror, right? And it's not only a mirror, but it's the source of the information that created that beauty as a sensory perception, mm-hmm. but the senses themselves don't actually exist in a real world. They are simply the dream instruments for creating a sense of separation, mm-hmm. a gap, as mm-hmm. was used mm-hmm. before, to enable you to appreciate divine beauty without owning it fully, mm-hmm. right? Because if you owned it again fully, at the ego level, there's a feeling of, what if I'm hurt again, right? What if I love and am vulnerable and then I'm abandoned by all those good people that I project, but they turn out not to be once I open to them, right? So there's a distrust. Mm-hmm. And so it's only when you get past the distrust, and you recognize that that too is your fantasy, and that there is no actual external goodness. There is only the goodness of the self. And when you have gone deeply within and you come to a place of rest where you're not projecting anymore, you're not creating narratives, you're not producing any concepts about who you are and what the world is like, then all of that dissociated information field collapses and withdraws into itself, into the zero point, and then there is a sudden realization that that's all that you are, all that is, and that is Sat, that is Shiva, that is the absolute self. And if you stay in that state, then all the ego and its sanskaras and its fears and its wounds and its baggage completely dissolve forever.
Mm-hmm. I follow and understand mm-hmm. with this mm-hmm. head.
Now you have to ask yourself why you want to delay the realization. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's like Joseph Campbell was famous for saying in a in lectures, an American is somebody who would prefer to go to a lecture about heaven than go to heaven. It's not just an American, although they're famously deserving of that, but it is it's every ego, mm. right? Mm. So you want to keep it as a symbolic representation. Mm-hmm. Which will help to shore up the confidence of the ego that, yes, the world is meaningful and good and God exists somewhere out there and I will ultimately be able to feel like when I leave the body, my consciousness can go to God and be lifted up into the light and brought into bliss. But it doesn't want it to happen while alive. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I heard you. I heard you say rest, mm-hmm. and to me the word stillness comes to mind,
yeah,
and that's what I'm seeking.
Yes.
You know, in meditation.
That's right. The eye that is seeking it is also keeping it away by the act of seeking it. Mm-hmm. Right, because seeking means you have to put out feelers everywhere. You have to imagine that there's a world in which it can be found. Mm-hmm. All of that is an illusion. Mm-hmm. Once you rest from the seeking, you will have found.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you will have found that you are what you sought.
Mm-hmm. Just real quick, bear with me. At the beginning of this... this week we had a guided meditation from you, and in it you were guiding us to deep sleep. And one word or one phrase that stuck with me is getting through the eye of the needle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that stillness, I think, mm-hmm. means to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when I try to get there, it feels like I am getting into a dream state.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm in that soul mm-hmm. level.
That's right. However, it's important to know that these three states are always simultaneously present.
Mm-hmm.
You are at this moment in deep sleep. You're also dreaming. You're having reverie states, thoughts, images in your mind, right? All of that's going on. And you're in a waking state, mm-hmm. right? And you're aware that all of this is contained. All three of these are contained in a larger awareness that never changes, that doesn't go through alternation of apparent states.
Mm-hmm.
And once you are able to contain them all, then you're liberated from the illusion of the ego entirely.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those states become a kind of information in which there is stillness at the same time that there is activity.
Mm-hmm.
And the two are not actually two, they are one. It's that non-duality of duality and non-duality.
Thank you.
Thank you. Samsara is nirvana. please.
You just mentioned that when you are able to contain all the three states, mm-hmm. what enables the ableing to contain?
The letting go of a boundary between them that separates the waking state from the deep sleep and from the dream state in order to make it feel like you have an interior and there is an exterior world, right? And that when you sleep, it is just your body taking a break from a real world and from dream states, but that there will be a separate waking entity that will return after a deep sleep and be able to continue its ego life. But when all three are present, that illusion of an ego life, which is based on the linearity of the alternation of these avastas, disappears, and the turiya state emerges as containing them all. And once you realize the turiya state is where you really are located, not in any of the avastas, then there's no longer any boundary to the self, and it's one with the infinite.
So it's the one just swaha is the enjoyment of duality?
Actually, the enjoyment increases. One lets go of the investment and the attachment to particular aspects of reality, right? It's not even reality, but of appearance. And by letting go and being unconditional, not caring what appears and what disappears, not trying to hold on to anything and not worried about losing anything or that the letting go will create some issue. It is the total acceptance that the entire flow of information is bringing about a divine order in the mandala of the phenomenal appearance, because it is now being projected from the coherent self in Turiya, not from an ego mind that only gets a sliver of that information and without distortion in Turiya. And so the letting go is wanting the infinite joy of that divine beauty.
And the fear is, while there's an ego, that if one accepts the infinite joy and beauty and love, then...
Like you had as a baby.
Yes.
What will happen?
Oh, boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the fantasy.
That's the fantasy, yeah.
That is obsolete and has to be dissolved.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, was this useful to anyone? Did it seem sane? Yeah? Well, you're crazy then. You are at the brink of liberation from duality and from the illusion of separation. So congratulations to all of you manifestations of Shiva. And Shiva Aham is our true nature, and we are all together as one manifesting the universe as Om Tat Sat. And it is these three mantras that are responsible in their archetypal energetic vibrational frequency to creation, sustenance, and destruction. And when all three are vibrating simultaneously, the singularity emerges, and the cosmos, which is the representation of the mind of God, disappears. into the real. Namaste.
Namaste.